I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from a UAE, which, along with other GCC countries, has been the most targeted country amidst the Trump-Epstein-Fury war. It is the most unpopular war in American history. Thousands have been killed in Iran and across West Asia, with a million displaced across Lebanon. Hundreds of children have been killed there. And there are the economic consequences of war in the most strategic choke point on Earth that has already begun to impact billions. If Trump was telling the truth about presents and negotiations and deadlines this week, we're hours away from his deadline for collective punishment of Iran as he threatens to destroy power to 90 million people. This after a month of a war his Pentagon boss Pete Hegseth characterized by saying, "We negotiate with bombs." The world's largest oil exporter is Saudi Arabia, cornerstone of the U.S. petrodollar system, which in the Strait of Hormuz is now traded in yuan. Saudi Arabia called out Netanyahu's war on Gaza as a genocide and refused to join the Abraham Accords. It signed a strategic pact with Iran in China. But Iran bombed Saudi Arabia even after it claimed it told Trump he couldn't use U.S. bases in Saudi Arabia to bomb Iran. Close to Saudi government circles is the founder and chairman of the global think tank, the Gulf Research Center. Dr. Abdulaziz Saga is an advisory board member of the Gulf International Forum, and he joins me now from Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. Dr. Abdulaziz, thank you so much for coming on Going Underground. Before I get to your very, very prescient piece in the Gulf Research Center newsletter, Gulf Security Looking for a Pragmatic Framework for a Fragmented Regional Order, just let's get to some disinformation. I mean, it's been a week of disinformation, arguably. What did you make of a repeated attempts by media, especially in NATO nations, to claim that Saudi Arabia was joining in on this Netanyahu-Trump war in Iran?
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure for me to be with you today. Well, there is a lot of misinformation. There is a lot of, unfortunately, fabricated sort of information according to other parties' wishes that they wanted to pass it on. But Saudi Arabia have been very clear in their position from day one that even that was very clear during the phone conversation between the Iranian president and the Saudi crown prince, that Saudi have declared they will not allow the usage of their air, space, sea for any attack against Iran. So I think that was a clear position from that one. It is unfortunate that the U.S. and Israel do make a very serious and decision related to the region without consulting the region. And I think I will go back to, the 12 days war and even this one today. And what will be more serious if the U.S. will try to reach any agreement without taking into account the regional position, because the regional position is very important. They started the war. They fight with each other. We pay for the consequences. A lot of things have happened here without being responsible for it. But at the same time, we did not appreciate what Iran took as position against the Gulf country. Iran have taken a very difficult or sort of harsh.
In fairness, they made it clear. They did make it clear before the war started.
Yeah, but what do we have to do with that? Because they made it clear before the war that they will target the U.S. Military presence. They did not make it clear that they will attack airports and ports and civilian location and places. So this is, again, the foreign bases in the Gulf have been invited by the Gulf countries, and they have their own agreement with them. And they only start using it only after the Iranian attack to those bases. So in reality, if Iran did not attack the Gulf countries, they could have used them in a stronger mediation role and in a stronger pressure. What have made President Trump's decision to go from 48 hours to 5 days basically is the pressure from the Gulf, because the pressure from the Gulf says, if you want to black out Iran, as you said, the consequences will be in the region, and Iran will retaliate in all the critical facility here in the region. So it was the region role that have made him change his mind and postponed it for 5 days, hoping that political and diplomatic effort take place that will result to some acceptance
you
and agreement
it's that.
Between
you
both
believe
sides.
It's that? I mean, I know that Iran said it would retaliate by taking out the salination plants of the GCC and the power plants if Trump did exert this collective punishment on Iran. But, of course, within the United States, everyone says it's because he wanted to repair the damage done to the markets. And there have been very suspicious trades on the markets ahead and during his war.
Yeah, I mean, the market did respond positively to what he said, but at the same time, still both have continued attacking each other, and it did not stop. I thought Iran could have made another gesture also, which is very important, when he said he postponed for 5 days to say, okay, the Strait of Hormuz is free, is open for everybody to cross and to leave. We have more than 1,100 vessels being held in the Gulf, in the water there. But that did not happen. So the escalation, which we are totally against it from the region, we wanted to have a de-escalation. We're pushing for a better discussion, negotiation. But let's see. You know, it's...
I want to return to this and the element of consultation. But Trump said in the Oval Office that the Crown Prince is fighting with us. He said that on the 24th of March, this week. What does he mean that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is fighting with us?
He doesn't mean that we are joining the U.S. forces or the Israeli in any operation. I think he's fighting, which means he's defending his country from any Iranian attack into Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia decided very clearly. They could have, by the way, because they divided into three steps. Steps number one, to keep room for political discussion and negotiation, and then move in case if that did not work. And if Iran continues, their attack on the Gulf countries, then the Gulf countries will have an option to allow the U.S. Using the airspace or the sea capability, for responding to the Iranian attack. The third, which they have decided not to go for definitely, which is sending their own military capability to the source of the fire coming out of Iran. Although the Saudi foreign minister, he did not exclude any respond by a military action in case if it continues. In fact, he pushed for Iran to keep and maintain the good neighborhood relation, because we both have to live together even after all the foreign forces will leave the region.
I mean, would you say that comments from senior Saudi and UAE officials and other GCC government officials increase the likelihood of attacks? I know, as you say, Iran said that they were only going to target the actual U.S. bases stationed on these territories. And as you say, that's not been the case. Civilian targets have been hit. Would you say that officials from GCC countries have to be careful in their announcements?
Well, they will be careful because of two reasons. I mean, the reason why we did not want to join from day one, simply for some serious reason. One of it, in case if we join, we need to be under the full command of the U.S., where the Israeli is part of that one, and that many countries in the region here do not have a relation with Israel. They do not wish to be with Israel in any military operation or command. That's one. Second, the fact that we are taking the position to defend our country, it's different than the position of going inside Iran and attack, because that then will justify for the Iranian to do any counterattack. So we wanted to avoid that. And the more important is we are not a war promoter. What we are promoting is peace, stability, and security. We wanted to look at a security architecture in the region where we are all involved in it, and that should bring a peace to the region rather than an escalation.
Yeah, I mean, the odd thing was, on this program, we spoke to the ex-head of CENTCOM, Admiral Fallon. We spoke to an ex-commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. And when I explained to them, which I think is obvious to both of us, that GCC countries have been absolutely cast iron about not allowing attacks on Iran from their territory, they just looked at me. People can watch the video online. They just looked at me as if, well, that isn't something they were even aware of. Why do you think American personnel, Trump's performance in the Oval Office, appears to suggest as if, well, the GCC countries are very much on board with this, and if necessary, of course they would allow, in Saudi's case, King Fahad Air Base in Taif is being talked about a lot in NATO media as a base from which attacks on Iran have been happening.
Well, the U.S. Carrier in the water, they don't need any bases in the region to launch any attack against Iran because they have that massive capability, and the Israeli also have that massive capability. So they don't really need our support or our facility for this stage. But in case if there is any, that would have been or that would have started after the Iranian attack their presence in the region, because in the beginning there was nothing from the region here has been used or even launched from the region. But I think after the fact that the Iranian targeted the U.S. bases, then they justified it that they can use, if there is necessity, any sort of facility they can identify.
I'll return to that part too, but just before we go to the break, but there's been absolutely no consultation with any GCC government, as far as you know, and certainly not with the Saudi government, before Trump assassinated Khamenei and his family in Tehran.
Well, as far as I know, and as far as the official position of all the GCC countries, there has been no consultation. The U.S. have decided, in fact, as I said, we have all the countries have clearly sent the signal that we are not in support of any escalation, and we do not wish to see a war in the region here. We will not allow the usage of our facility or aerospace or sea. But at the same time, I don't think the U.S. would need to consult. You know, normally they take their own action spontaneously, particularly President Trump, without really giving much consultation. And not only him. I think if I go back to JCPOA 2015 and that agreement, we learn about it from the media. Yes, there was some negotiation, but what sort of agreement? We learn about it from the media when they decided to go for the 12 days, maybe an hour before, you know, they made it, they made the announcement. But if they consult the region will definitely give them a better advice that any escalation, because we're the one who will have to take any consequences of that one. We're the one who has to live together with our neighborhood. We're the one who has to pay for that.
Dr. Abdulaziz Saga, I'll stop you there. More from the Gulf Research Center's founder and chairman after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and chairman of the Gulf Research Center, Dr. Abdulaziz Saga. Dr. Abdulaziz, in part one, you were saying that it is conceivable that bases in GCC countries could be used to mount attacks on Iran once there have been attacks on those GCC countries. I mean, I don't know whether I got that right, and surely that would be the escalatory ladder, because Iran would then say, you're allowing the bases on your territory to be used for attacks on Iran.
You see, the problem with the U.S. capability, they can do anything they want on a higher altitude where we cannot respond to that one and we cannot interfere. Their F-35 and their other capability can go that high. They can use their satellite images. They can use their radar and, achieve a lot in that one. I don't think a jet fighter will take place from Taif, as you call it, King Fahad base, and fly all the way to Tehran from here. I think that's a far fetch because the carrier is much more closer. They have them either in the Mediterranean or on the Arabian Sea, which is a far closer destination than being flying all the way from Taif here.
Yeah, I should say the USS Gerald Ford had to run away, as far as I can tell. And the Iranians are claiming a hit on the USS Abraham Lincoln. But then, actually, doesn't Saudi Arabia have a better card than that, which is the oil price, and could threaten the United States, regardless of their jets, to say, look, you can't attack countries that are geographically ones that Saudi Arabia will always have to live next to from our territory. Otherwise, we will cut supply of oil. And I think Saudi Arabia has a very important and glorious history of this, of course, from Sheikh Yamani onwards.
Yeah, but at the same time, Saudi have decided and the rest of the Gulf country not to politicalize the oil as a product and kept it as a commercial product and supply and demand. And as you know, the U.S. today, they're becoming a net exporter, so they're not waiting. In fact, they do stand to benefit themselves from exporting to other market and so. But still, you know, what I would say, if Iran did not attack the Gulf countries, if Iran use the Gulf countries as a better mediator, if Iran decided, you know, to send a different signal to the region here, they would have gained the minds of the people here. In fact, if you go back to the 12 days war, the GCC have condemned the U.S. and the Russian, the U.S. and the Israeli attack on Iran. Until Iran decided to attack, you know, Qatar, then they were condemned for that sort of attack, and their apology was accepted later on. But at the same time, I think with all these sorts of things happening, I think they mixed the whole thing. And maybe that was due to the Thursday attack and how that have been severely impacting on the Iranian leadership and the death of the leadership that they were in the same place. But still, I think ultimately, I would say we live in the same region. We need to find a formula, you know, with Iran. We need to find a sort of a guarantee that can ensure them and ensure us that there will be no action. In fact, I remember 2019, I was in New York when President Rouhani came up with the Hormuz Initiative, no intervention, no aggression. And I think that was a good initiative at that time. But the problem, the Iranian, they never wanted to look at it from the back date. They want to look at it from the forward date. So they want to keep all their presence in the region, whether in Iraq or Syria or Lebanon and so, or Yemen, untouchable.
Yeah, I mean, I think they see that as allowed under international law in terms of supporting resistance movements, of course. But then I have to ask you whether at that time, and you mentioned it in your article in February, Iran's Hormuz Peace Initiative, whether on the table of those negotiations was the fact that there are U.S. bases in this region. I mean, plainly, U.S. bases in GCC countries make those GCC countries targets. Do you think one outcome of the war will be the removal of these bases?
Well, definitely the Gulf country after the war will finish and settle, an agreement will be reached. They are going to revisit the whole security architecture, including the external or foreigner military presence in the region. And that will depend on what sort of agreement will be reached after this, after ending the war, what sort of guarantor, how is the regime in Iran
going
to respond to such things?
What do you feel? Do you think they should be removed?
Oh, personally, I feel it was out of necessity that they were invited to be there, you know, after the Iraq invasion of Kuwait at that time, and after all this, escalation in the region and the continuous threat from Iran I counted more than 50 times when the Iranians said, we will close the Strait of Hormuz. So if you continue send signal, it's your behavior that will determine on the other side what sort of security precaution they would need to take. And I think because of all of that, interventionist policy, expansionist, the maritime security, the energy security, that would have forced the region. I mean, a Navy base in Bahrain is there since many years. And also, don't forget, most of the Gulf countries, they still have a Western military doctrine. The U.S. is the main supplier of their military. So there is an old relation. But the fact that they have invited this sort of capability to be here in the region, that because of the threat perception. On the Iranian perception, they look at Israel, U.S., and the friendly country of the U.S. in the region as the threat for them. The friendly country, because they're worried about the usage of their presence in the region here. But for Iran, still, US and Israel remain threat number one.
Yeah,
and I think if they wanted...
After Mike Huckabee's interview, the American ambassador to Israel's interview with Tucker Carlson, I think we know that Saudi Arabia would presumably share those fears as well, because clearly the greater Israel project involves the invasion of Saudi Arabia.
Traditionally, we thought Israel is not a big threat to us. It's only after their attack on Qatar and when Netanyahu came out and said, nobody is excluded. The reason for that, we thought since Israel is the strongest alliance with the U.S. in the region, and since the region have a strong partnership with the U.S., that will not happen. But what happened is different. What happened that the Israeli attacked Qatar, and clearly came out and said, nobody is excluded, we can go anywhere, we can do anything. Then definitely Israel became in the top list of the threat.
If GCC country, I'm not sure about Bahrain because it has a sort of more complicated lease agreement. I'm not even sure the US base in Bahrain belongs to Bahrain because of the way it was written up. But if the rest of the region kicked out the US bases, what would it mean for defense procurement? I mean, I do want to get back to the war, but I mean, the figures and the amounts of money, Saudi Arabia, $9 billion on Patriots on 30th of January, $3 billion on F-15s. The UAE, where I'm speaking to you from, THAAD batteries, very successful they have been, $8.4 billion, $7 billion on Patriots on the 20th of March, just the other day. Surely kicking out the bases would mean new defense procurement strategies with Russia or China. It couldn't continue to have defense partnerships with the United States.
I think if Russia and China wanted to have a stronger relation to the region, this is the time that they can play a mediation role and a role in Iran to ensure that the de-escalation and not escalation. China today still is the largest buyer, the largest partner economically to the Gulf region. There is more than $300 billion business between both sides. Russia is not that much, but still Russia today relation with most of the Gulf country definitely it's far, far better than what it used to be. But still, Russia can play a strong role in terms of mediation and bringing and being part of the new security architecture, of course, should they wish to play that one.
I don't want to be like an advert for your Gulf Research Center, but it literally was, days or just a week, 2 weeks before, that you wrote, the United States remains a key security partner, yet it is unlikely to provide the kind of formal binding treaty guarantees that some Gulf states may seek. You talked about the commitment of Washington to the safety of GCC countries. What now do you think? And why is it people didn't listen to you earlier, arguably? And I don't know whether you were inspired to write that, obviously, after the attack on Qatar during the 12-day war.
My area of specialty, I made my master and my PhD also in regional security. So it's my subject. And I like to focus also in that issue. But at the same time, I think not having the sort of security arrangement agreement that we wanted to have with the U.S. I mean, look at, after the attack from the Israeli, what did Qatar get? They get an executive order. And if I look at in 1 year, there was more than 220 executive order has been canceled by President Trump. So an executive order, it's not a security framework. What Saudi wanted to have as a security framework with the US, they did not get. What we get is an outside NATO alliances, arrangement, which is basically we have it, So the question was, if this presence in the region here is to protect Israel primarily and to defend themselves, then the big question, do we still need it or no?
And because I think Pakistan gives that to you without a military presence of the kind the United States has in the region. And I'm not sure, a senior Saudi official said, this is comprehensive defensive agreement that encompasses all military means. When asked about whether Saudi Arabia was under the nuclear umbrella of Pakistan when it was the defense pact was signed in September last year.
It has nothing to do with the nuclear. I tell you why. Because Pakistan, they do have their own nuclear doctrine. They have stated it before. They did reconfirm it. They have received a clear bill from the US on their nuclear deterrent. And at the same time, they're overstretched. The only places I can see nuclear umbrella have been from Russia to Belarus, and from America, they have some facility in the UK, Turkey, and maybe in Germany. So you need to have surplus, you need to have excess capacity that you can do it. Pakistan do not have that excess capacity. But I think historically, since 67, there is a strong military relation between Pakistan and Saudi. Many officers have been trained in Pakistan. We still have more than 1,200 Pakistani trainer. Pakistan definitely based on their belief on Islam and so, and they feel the holy places are in Saudi Arabia. Willingly, they're willing to come and to defend if there is an attack on Saudi. So far, we have built our capacity to be able to respond to all of this. And Pakistan did not join even, our war in Yemen. But still, we have the good and a strong relation when it comes to the training and also when it comes to the support services and so. So we did not need them for this one. We do have that sort of arrangement.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully some strategic piece afterwards will include Yemen in it. But just finally, and very quickly, the strategic pact between Saudi Arabia and Iran signed in China, do you see that as going nowhere now, or is it going to be strengthened after this war? And why did it not succeed in preventing any retaliatory attacks on Riyadh as opposed to the U.S. military bases?
Well, I was one of the great supporters of that agreement in the March 2023. I believe that it was very important to have such an agreement. I was happy to see the improvement to the relation. But at the same time, I think Iran wanted to deal on the Saudi, on the unilateral and not in multilateral. They did not want it to address the regional issues that is concerned for everybody. And they kept it focused on the Saudi-Iran relation precisely.
But there could be closer ties after this war between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Well, it all depends who will be in Tehran and how are they going to address the relations
with
the region.
Well, if it's not an American vassal state, I mean.
Of course, no, yeah. By the way, we are totally against any fragmentation in Iran. We wanted to see a central government in Iran taking control, because a fragmented state in Iran would lead to a disaster for the whole region. So in no way the countries in the region are in support of a fragmented Iran.
Dr. Abdulaziz Sagar, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
That's it for the show. Our thoughts are with all those affected by the war in West Asia. Our war coverage will continue on Monday with a U.S. State Department official in the government of Butcher of Libya, Barack Obama. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.